Hey, my friends, we gotta get started. We're allowed to do what we're allowed to do. Okay, I am both honored and humbled by this crowd. Honored and humbled, and only slightly nervous. I want to tell you something about myself, as most of this sheer will be, is kind of just an expression of my own story, an expression of myself, an expression of the things that I love and the experiences that I've had with Talmud Torah. There's not going to be so much formal Torah being said. I mean, I will be using some makoros and some sources, but it's important to note from the outset what I'm sharing with you right now is my personal experience. This is not everybody's personal experience. There's many ways to love learning Torah. That's one of the most important things you have to know when trying to figure out how to love learning Torah, is that there are many ways to love learning Torah. Many different ways to learn Torah, many different parts of Torah to learn. And what I'm about to share with you is one aspect of what I love about Torah, the part that I find one of the most thrilling aspects of my experience in learning. So just to share with you a little bit about myself, for those of you who know me well, I love sports. Particularly football, basketball, and watching hockey, not playing, but in that order. Football, I'm obsessed with football. My dream always, I applied for a fellowship of some sort a couple years back, and one of the questions was, what would you be doing, what career would you be pursuing if you weren't becoming a rabbi? And my answer was an NFL offensive coordinator. I'm obsessed with football, and in elementary school, instead of doodling other things, my doodles were writing up offensive plays for my future NFL offensive coordinator career. I still have some in the notebooks. They're pretty good plays. I love football. I love basketball. I recently moved to Chicago and got to see some Blackhawks games, so I now love hockey also. I love a lot of other things. I love hanging out with friends. I love watching movies, particularly funny movies. I get a little bit too depressed when I watch sad movies, so I love watching funny movies. I love music. I love all sorts of things that are very stimulating, very exciting, and very fun. Very enjoyable. I tell you that for the following reason. It's important that you know that to appreciate the significance and the substance of what I'm about to tell you. Because if I was a person who didn't love those types of things, then what I'm about to say wouldn't be all that meaningful. But because I love all those things, I want you to realize and appreciate what I'm about to tell you, and I mean it very seriously. I'm not saying this just to be a rabbi. I'm not saying this because I'm giving a shiur. I mean this very, very genuinely. Very sincerely. I love learning Gemara as much, if not more, at moments, as those things. I find learning Gemara, bi'iyun, learning Gemara in depth, as thrilling, as exciting, as adrenaline pumping, and I get as much of a rush, again, if not more, at moments, from learning a good sugya of Gemara, bi'iyun, as I do watching a great football game, playing in a great basketball game. Now, if you actually believe what I just said, and you don't think I'm just paying lip service to it, you should be confused. And you might be doubting the sincerity of what I just said, as I would if I was in your seat listening to some guy say that. Because it seems very foreign. I assume I'm speaking for you, but I assume that's something that seems bizarre and hard to relate to. So what I want to do together in the next approximately half an hour is share with you my attempt to describe my internal experience of learning Gemara. What I find so thrilling, what I find so exciting, so fun, so enjoyable. What it is that gives me that rush of adrenaline when I'm sitting with a book, not watching Adam Sandler, not watching Peyton Manning, but sitting with a book about laws. Why is that so exciting? Where is the rush of adrenaline coming from? Why is that fun? And why is it more fun, more thrilling, at times, than those other activities that are so stimulating and that I love so much? That's what I want to try and share with you. It's not an easy thing to do, because it's very hard to describe your own experience. Very hard to describe your own experience. To talk about an idea is one thing, but to describe your own internal experience is not so easy. It's one of the harder things to do. I would actually say it's impossible, but I'm going to try my best to describe my own inner experience of learning Gemara and what I find so enjoyable and so exciting about it. It all started for me in 11th grade. I had an amazing Rebbe in 11th grade in MTA. Anyone know who? Rabbi Mendelsohn, Baruch Pesach Mendelsohn. Anyone have him? Anyone going to have him? I'm very fortunate. There were a lot of things that led up to his ability to have success at getting me into learning, one of them being NCSY Kollel in the summer post-10th grade, but I give Rabbi Mendelsohn most of the credit for making me someone who loves learning Gemara. What Rabbi Mendelsohn was amazing at doing was that, unlike other Gemara Rebbes that I had, Rabbi Mendelsohn didn't just teach us material. He wasn't passing on information. He wasn't lecturing us. He wasn't teaching us. Rabbi Mendelsohn had an amazing skill at creating an experience in the classroom in which we weren't receiving information. We weren't listening to him and receiving information. We were involved on our own in a project of building. We were asking the questions that mattered on the Gemara and the Sugya. We were answering the questions. We were attacking each other when someone else gave an answer. We were having the whole back and forth between ourselves. And Rabbi Mendelsohn was sitting there facilitating that experience. But he wasn't just lecturing us. We were alive. Our voices were what carried the shiur, what made the shiur. He was creating an environment in which that took place. But the experience of shiur was one in which what we said was the shiur. That was the experience. And that turned me on. That created an entirely new experience of learning Gemara. And more than that, the tipping point for me was one Thursday night at Mishmar in MTA, NYU, a Mishmar we had, where he assigned each of us something to learn and present to the rest of the class. So we learned it on our own, and then we presented it to the class. And when I did my presentation of a certain piece of Gemara, I still remember to this day exactly what it was, because it was something that I got so entrenched in, so engaged in, I remember to this day. It was the Sugya of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira, and it was the Sma. See, from years and 9, the Sma's comments on the Sugya of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. I even remember the specific words, Meshata HaYisibach, for whoever's familiar with the Sugya. That was it. I presented on that, and I got in a fight with Rabbi Mendelsohn about what it meant. And my life was changed forever after that fight. I got in a fight with Rabbi Mendelsohn as to what the Sma meant. And I was passionate about it. I cared. I had a pshat. I had a pshat in the Sma. And when I was presenting, Rabbi Mendelsohn thought my pshat was wrong. And he challenged me. And I fired back. And we got into a fight about it. Not a bad fight. A good fight. We got into a battle about what pshat in the Sma was. And I had something to contribute that I thought was correct. And that the Rebbe was incorrect. And we were going back and forth, arguing about it. And after the Mishmar ended, I wasn't done. I was obsessed with this all of a sudden. I needed to know how to prove that I was right. I went down to the YU Beis Medrash, found my Madri Chim from NCSY Kol. But then I started discussing with everyone. I was on like a mission to delve deeper into this Sma, into this Sugya of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Aveira. And from that point on, I was hooked on Gemara. And I found where Gemara spoke to me. And again, this is my personal experience. Different people have different ways of connecting. I'm an Iyun person, the depth of Gemara, not a Bekiyas person, not a breadth, but a depth of Gemara person, for better or for worse. But that's my Nitiya, that's my Koach and Hashem. And what I discovered is that I enjoy learning when it allows me to be creative, when it empowers me to figure something out on my own, have my own opinion, have a presentation of something, and being trying to defend it, trying to argue for it, trying to figure it out, trying to analyze it, trying to understand something deeper through my own analysis. And I found that, and I still find that, to be the most thrilling experience in the world. Analyzing something that's difficult to understand and trying to come up with a way to explain it and to understand it on a deeper level, to me, is one of the greatest joys in life. It's one of the most thrilling experiences you could possibly have. And it's frustrating for me to even try and communicate it, because I know that through words, you won't be able to appreciate the inner experience and thrill and adrenaline that I have, that I believe that other people can have, of engaging in that creative experience. I wanted to share some sources with you, very quickly, on the importance of Chiddush in Torah. Because what I want to offer you tonight, in a nutshell, give you a one-sentence version of tonight, is that I think we can find our joy in learning through the venture of Chiddush. What does Chiddush mean? You guys know what Chiddush means, yeah? Innovation, creativity, coming up with something new. To me, that is the joy of learning, is Chiddush. Is the ability to analyze something from a fresh standpoint, from your own vantage point, from your own personal perspective, from your own analysis, your own creativity, your own innovation, That is Chiddush. And that is the joy of learning. Look at this radical Gemara. If you've never seen this Gemara before, when I finish, you might be flying through the window. There are bars, so watch out. This is a crazy Gemara. It's mind-boggling. It's radical, and it's shocking, and it almost sounds heretical, honestly. Which is why it's so fun. I thought you'd like that. Says source number 10 on the back of the page. Starting with the second-to-last source first. Tana. There's a famous Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Kesem Beis that discusses a certain sugi about Tumah. I know you don't all have sources. Please listen closely or share with someone next to you. If a few people have sources next to them, if you don't mind passing it around so people can share. The Gemara says there's a debate between Rabbi Yeshua and other Chachamim in the Gemara. There's a debate between Rabbi Yeshua and all the Chachamim, Rabbi Eliezer. A debate between Rabbi Eliezer and all the other Tanaim or all the other rabbis in the Gemara. They're arguing about something. And Rabbi Eliezer says, we're not getting into the specifics of what they were arguing about. Tana, but also Ayom Hashem, Rabbi Eliezer, Chul Shuvah's Balam, the little kibble man. Rabbi Eliezer argued all the arguments in the world against all the other rabbis of his position. He was arguing for his position. He made every argument he could ever come up with. And he seemed right, but they didn't accept it. They didn't accept it. Lo kibble him. They didn't accept him. Amar Lahab, he said to them, listen closely, Im halacha kimosi, if I'm correct, if God thinks that I'm correct, Charov ze yochia, this carob tree will prove that I'm right in a miraculous way. Nekar charov in komo mea amos. The charov tree, this carob tree, uprooted itself and moved 100 amos. But amri la arba mea amos. Some say 400. Amru lo, they said to him, ein mei bin rayam in a charov. You can't bring a proof about a dispute in Gemara from a carob tree. What is the relevance of a carob tree to our debate? Chazav arbalim. So you said, fine, you're not going to take the carob tree, I'll come up with something else. Im halachi kemosi, if the halach is like me, ama samayim yochichu. This water, this spring of water, this pool of water will prove that I'm right. Chazru ama samayim lacharem. The current of the water switched directions in a miraculous way. Amru lo, they said to him, ein mei bin rayam ama samayim. You can't prove to us from ama samayim. I don't care how miraculous it is. You can't prove to us from there. Chazav arbalim. He said to them, im halachi kemosi, if I'm correct, kosli beis hamedrash yochichu. The walls of this very beis medrash should prove that I'm correct. Hitu kosle beis medrash lipol. They started to bend over, to fall in. They were about to fall and crash down. Gar b'harmi Yeshua. Yeshua got up. Not only got up, but gar means he with anger, with passion. Yeshua got up. Amar Lami said to them, Im tamidei chachamim menatzim zeh zeh b'halacha, atem mativchem. He said to the walls, he said, if tamidei chachamim are fighting in what's true in halacha, what do you have to do with this? Lo nafum b'klei fodosh shel Yeshua. They didn't fall all the way down because they wanted to honor Rabbi Yeshua. V'lo zakfum and take for the shabbos, but they didn't stand back up because they wanted to honor Rabbi Eliezer. V'adayin matin v'omnin. And some base measures in the world, these walls are still slanted somewhere. Elijah's going to find them one day. Chazav v'amar lahem. So Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer got back up and said to them again, Im halach kemosi. If I'm correct, guys, listen very closely here. If I'm correct, min hashamayim yochidu. Who's going to prove that I'm right? Hashem's going to prove that I'm right. What happened? The ultimate proof. The ultimate proof happened. We always say, if only we heard God's voice, we would know what to do, right? They're about to hear God's voice. Yatsa baskol v'amra. A baskol came out, whatever that means exactly, and said, why are you continuing? Why are you so persistent in arguing against Rabbi Eliezer? He's correct everywhere he speaks. Amr Yeshua Raglo, v'amar, Rabbi Yeshua got up and said three words that have reverberated throughout the tradition of Torah ever since. Possibly three of the most powerful words in the entire Chazal. He said, Lo v'shamayim hi. It's not in heaven to decide what the halacha should be. It's not in heaven to decide what the halacha should be. It's not in Hashem's hands to decide what Hashem's halacha should be. What does that mean? How is that possible? Hashem's telling you what the halacha is. And you're standing up and saying, Hashem has no business here telling me what the halacha is? What does that mean? My lo b'shamayim. What does that mean, the Gemara says? Amar b'yirmiyah. Shekvar nisban Torah min har Sinai. The Torah is already given to man. And you know what that means? That now it's in humans' hands. The Torah is in our hands to develop. We develop it based on the principles that Hashem gave us. We develop it based on the raw material that Hashem gave us to develop it with. But it's now in our hands to do what? To be mechadish. To make chidushim. To innovate. To create. To develop Torah weiter and weiter, to keep it going. Every new opportunity, every new insight, every new angle, every new aspect, we reanalyze afresh and anew, and we develop it through our own minds. Torah was given for us to be mechadish. Who said this in the Gemara? Remember? Who did we just read? Who said these wild words? Lo bashamani. Who said those words? Rabbi Yeshua. Look at the next Gemara. I see something cool. Source number 11. In Maseches Chagiga, Daf Gimel Min Aleph. Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis to Amaisa, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Broka, Rabbi Lazar, Ben Chasma, Shaholchu, Mahakba, Ben Rabbi Yeshua, Bekin. These rabbis went to greet who? Rabbi Yeshua, on one of the regalim. It's a mitzvah to greet the Rabbanim on the Shalosh Regalim. Amar Lahem, he said to them, Machidish Hayab Beis HaMedrash Hayom. What chidish did you come up with the Beis Medrash today? Amru Lo, they said to him, what do you mean what chidish? Tamidecha Anu. We are your students. We're drinking your water. Why are you asking us what chidish we have? We're receiving from you the Torah. We're waiting to hear you tell us the Torah. Why are you asking us what we came up with? Amar Lahem, he said, Afa Bichan, that's true. That's true. Even though that's true. There cannot be learning. There cannot be a base medrash, a study hall, a group of people learning Torah. There cannot be such a thing without chiddush. Who said this? That there can't be learning without chiddush? Rabbi Yeshua. Who said Torah is now in man's hands and not in God's hands? Rabbi Yeshua. This was his philosophy of Torah. This was his mentality. This is how he saw Torah. Torah is about developing chiddush. Torah is about developing chiddush. That's just a tiny drop of just some background in Chazal for this idea of chiddush in learning. But now I want to go back to sharing with you my internal experience of learning. What is the thrill of chiddush? What are you doing when you learn Gemara? If you had to describe to someone, think about this. I'm going to give you a second after I pose this question for you to think about it. If you had to describe to someone who's never encountered Gemara, never encountered Gemara before, what do you do when you learn Gemara? And don't tell me you take out your phone or go to sleep or buy a Max cake. And don't tell me you just can't read the words. What is learning Gemara? Try and think for a second. What is learning Gemara? What are you doing when you open a Gemara? What is someone who learns Gemara doing? Could you describe the process of learning Gemara? It's an important question to think about a little bit. What are you doing when you learn Gemara? It's an important question to think about. I don't even mean on like a deeper level of spirituality or anything like that. I mean very simply. What are you doing when you learn Gemara? What's the process of learning Gemara? So I want to share with you what it seems to me we're doing when we learn Gemara, and how Gemara is exciting to me through this experience. Gemara, if you haven't noticed yet, is one of the most disorganized works of literature I've ever seen. It's all over the place. Tangents are wild. It just mentions one person's name, and then all of a sudden it takes a right turn to talk about something totally disconnected. But by the way, it happens to mention that guy's name, so now it's going to bring that into this context again, and then from there it's going to go to another context. The Gemara just goes, well, it starts off on one topic, maybe it lasts on that topic for a second, and then it just goes way off, right? Way off, comes back, and then leaves again, comes back, leaves again. If you actually want to study one topic, there's one place in Gemara to primarily focus on, but if you want to understand that topic well, you have to start opening up almost all of Shas to understand it, because interspersed throughout Shas are different points of information about this topic, because Shas is all over the place. Now, why that is a topic for another time, a lot of interesting approaches to this, why that is a topic for another time. But to me, learning Gemara is the following. What you're doing when you learn Gemara is you're taking any given topic, let's say ownership. You're taking a topic of ownership of possession, ownership of material goods, ownership of land. You're taking a topic of marriage, a topic of divorce, a topic of bringing a korban, a topic of damaging another person's property. All different topics, whatever the topic is. And you're trying to understand that topic on its fullest and deepest level. Now to do that, you have to do the following. Shas, we know what Shas is, yeah? Shas is all Gemara. Shisa, Sidrei, Mishnah, but with Gemara, right? So Shas, throughout Shas, is a random dispersing of data points on any given topic. So throughout Shas, there will be different data points, points of information. You know what I mean by data points? Pieces of information, statements about the following topic throughout Shas. So for you to understand this topic, You need to track down all those different data points, all those different pieces of information, and start putting them together. And when you start putting together those different pieces of information, those different data points, you start to build a theory, an understanding, a conception of whatever the topic you're looking into. So you want to understand Kiddushin, so you open Maseches Kiddushin, and you start learning through Maseches Kiddushin, and you start amassing different points of information about the nature of Kiddushin, but then you realize you have to learn a different Gemara somewhere else, and another Gemara, and another Gemara, and another Gemara. And what happens, here's the exciting part, what happens when you start amassing these data points is you start to realize that there are all sorts of problems. There are all sorts of problems. Different data points contradict each other. Different data points indicate different understandings. One thing says one way, one thing says the other way. Or you find that one data point can be understood in four different ways. You're not sure which one's correct. And you start to try and piece together this puzzle. So you're amassing these different data points. You're starting to put them together so you can try and see how they fit together into this one puzzle to build this conception of Kiddushin, to build this conception, this view, this understanding of ownership, of theft, of damaging, of bringing a korban. And you're putting together all these points and starting to see how they work together, how they contradict each other. When you do that, it starts opening up very exciting opportunities, really interesting things. You thought you understood X in one way, but then when you brought Y into the picture, X doesn't make any more sense. So then you're bothered by this question. So you start looking, you start reading, you start researching, and then you find Z. And Z gives you a whole new spin on it, and suddenly there's an entirely new way to look at the sugya. Entirely new way to look at the sugya. But then you backtrack, and you realize, one second, I missed something. So something else that I could look at, bring this into the picture, and that changes it again. And it's constantly changing, constantly evolving, and you realize there's another subtlety, but then there's another kasha. And then I realize there's a machlokas rishon, there's two ways to understand this. I thought there's only one, there's really two. And then I realize that actually in the rishon, there's two ways to understand that. And then it starts developing and evolving into all these different intricacies, all these different contradictions, these different approaches, these different theories, all these different ways to look at this huge mass of data points. But who's doing all that? Who is doing all the work? What are you doing when you bring all these points together? When you realize the contradictions? When you come up with answers? When you start bringing in one thing and comparing it to another? And developing an approach, developing a way of looking at it? Who's doing all that? You are doing all that. You are developing an approach. And when you are behind the steering wheel, when you're in control, when it's in your mind, it's up to you to figure it out. If there's a kasha and rashi, no one's helping you. You got to figure it out. And you're developing an idea. You're developing an idea that no one else has ever said before you. You haven't seen it. Maybe someone said it, but you haven't seen it. And it's your own idea. It's your own innovation. It's your own creation. You are contributing to the existence of the tradition and the everlasting evolution of Torah. You're coming up with something new. You're coming up with something you can share with someone else. You can write it in an article. You can put it together. You can give a shiur on it. You are developing Torah. And you are the captain of the ship. You are behind the steering wheel. All these data points are raw material in your hands to craft and to develop and to create something new. Speaking personally, I can't speak for anyone else. I will just tell you, speaking personally, that experience of having those data points in my hands to compare with each other, to bring together, to look at it in different ways, to develop a theory, to craft that into a new understanding of any given topic in Torah, is one of the most thrilling and adrenaline-rushing, pumping, exciting, mind-blowing experiences you could ever have. For me in my life, it's the ultimate pinnacle joy of life. It is the greatest source of pleasure. And I mean pleasure, thrill, excitement. It's joyful. When I'm at that point, and this is not learning every day, I'm not trying to pretend it is. This is not what my learning is like every single day. But when I'm at that point in a sugya, when I've gotten to the point that I have all those data points in my hands, and now I'm playing with them, I'm trying to come up with a way of viewing something, I am completely sucked into it. There's nothing else I want to do. I'll be perfectly frank with you right now, I'll be very honest. It's actually a challenge for me because I become more irritable. I don't have time for anyone. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to do anything. All I want to do is keep working on that sugya. It's the only thing I want to do. It's so enveloping. It's so fun. It's an amazing experience of having that in your hands. You are crafting, you are creating, you're in control, and you're developing something of such significance, of such beauty, and it's thrilling. It's absolutely thrilling. I become so indifferent to everything else. That doesn't happen that often. Don't think I'm some great person. But when it happens, it's unbelievable. Now, here's the challenge, though. The challenge is that the thrill, there's a few challenges, which I'm going to get to in a second, but one of the challenging points is that the thrill doesn't come instantly. Because I'll be very honest with you. The stages of amassing the information, amassing those data points, can sometimes be kind of tedious. So the early stages of a sugya, the early stages of trying to develop and get to that point of the creation, of the creativity, that part is kind of difficult. You have to try to push yourself and plug your way through it. But once you get to that point of having the information in hand, and now you're at the creative stage of learning, you're at the creativity stage of learning, then it's mind-blowingly awesome. It's absolutely thrilling. That's my experience with learning. And that's what I primarily wanted to share with you. Now, there's a few challenges in this. I'll start with the first challenge, and then we'll get to an even more practical challenge. The first challenge is that there's an inverse relationship between the experience of joy and the level of ease or difficulty. Meaning, based on this, for me, when something is more enjoyable, it's when it's more disorganized. It's when there's more creativity that's in my hands. When I'm more empowered. When there's more left for me to be done, that's when it becomes more exciting. But that's also when it's more difficult to get to that point. You follow what I'm saying? Is it making sense? Right? The more there is for you to do, the more exciting and enjoyable it is. But it also means the harder and more difficult it is. So it's kind of a tricky situation. It's hard to get to that point. But what I'm offering to you is that when you push yourself to get to that point of having those data points in your hands, and now you understand what's going on, it's in your hands to finish up, to develop that ultimate view of this topic, it's amazing. That's challenge number one. But let's just get to the real challenge. Let's get to the real challenge now. Let's be perfectly honest with each other. Most people in this room are not holding yet by what I was just talking about. Is that, do we agree about that? Is that like a blow to your egos? No, right? So what does that have to do with you? That was nice. See someone get a little bit excited and sweaty. But what does that have to do with you? How is this going to help you? So what I want to suggest to you is that it can totally help you. First of all, it's important to know that this exists. You know why it's important to know it exists? Because you'll get there one day. You'll get there. If you plug away, if you put in the effort, you'll get to the point where you're hitting these peak experiences of total joy in the experience of creativity and learning. You'll get to that point one day. But let's talk more in the present. Let's talk more importantly in the present. I want to suggest to you something that I don't think most Rebbeim would usually throw out there. So I do this with a little bit of hesitation. But I want to suggest to you that when you try learning Gemara on your own, usually what happens is, correct me if I'm wrong, usually what happens is that you open a Gemara, you can't get through so much of it because it's a foreign language, and there's no punctuation, and there's no commas and periods and question marks and exclamation points, semicolons, you don't know what's flying, you don't know what's going on, and it ends up being a pretty frustrating experience of just breaking your teeth on a bunch of words. That's usually what happens, right? To have the type of experience we're talking about, there needs to be that you get past that stage. What I want to suggest to you, with hesitancy, is that you take some time out of your learning and use ArtScroll. Use some easier stuff in the sense of the hard skills. Don't focus all your attention 100% on the hard skills. You know what I mean by hard skills? The hard skills are like the reading, right? The knowing where something is. The basic building blocks of getting through things. So when you're at your stage of learning, it's extremely important to focus on that. You shouldn't always use ArtScroll. I'm not saying that. You should break your teeth on reading Gemara. You should push yourself to get through a hard piece of Gemara when you can't figure it out. And open a Jasher instead of an ArtScroll. Ask someone to help you read it instead of an ArtScroll. That's very, very important. But take some time out of your learning to be able to taste an experience of what I'm talking about. Take some time of your learning. Have one chunk of your learning that you do on your own. Be learning without having to break your teeth on that. That you can get to that stage of analysis. Use an art scroll to get through the Gemara. Have someone help you. Have someone give you some makoros, some sources to work on. Speak to a madrich. When I got back from NTSY Kola after 11th grade, after my second summer, I was in MTA, like I said. I was in the base medrash, the YU base medrash. I spoke to my madrich, and I asked them to give me guiding sources to be able to learn some sugyas, to be able to start doing exactly this. Because I knew at the time, from my own experience, that this is where I will enjoy learning. Yes, I have to push myself to break my teeth over reading Gemara, because otherwise I'll never know how to read Gemara and I'll be stuck at this level forever. But I also realize that if all I do is break my teeth over Gemara, I'm not going to enjoy Gemara ever. So I'm going to break my teeth over it, and then I'm also never going to do it, because I'm just going to chuck the whole thing in the garbage and forget it. So I realized, and thank God I did a smart thing, I asked people to help me, guide me in learning some sugyas b'iyum. And they did that, and in 12th grade I was sitting in my house at night, learning sugyas, learning machloksim, learning chakiras, learning what Rav Rosenzweig said in shir, because it was enjoyable, it was exciting, it was creative, it was in my own hands. I was molding something, I was creative, I was the captain of the ship already at that point. Not because I was so great at learning, I probably had no idea what I'm doing. When I look back at the notes, they don't make that much sense. But at the time I thought it did, but that's irrelevant, because the point is that I was already experiencing some of that joy. Some of that self-empowered creativity and innovation in learning, in creating my own mahalcha, my own approaches, my own ideas in something. That's the thrill of chiddush. That's the adrenaline of learning a sugya b'iyun. So my advice to you is, number one, get some help. Use art scroll a little bit. Speak to madrichim, speak to people to get some help. Number two, and this is equally important, is that it's not an all or nothing game. I painted this picture of radical creativity, radical innovation, radical self-empowerment, independent learning. But it doesn't have to be that extreme. I want to explain to you what I mean in two ways. Number one, when you listen to a shir, you might have your own ha'aros, your own insights, your own small additions to the shir. Don't think, and this is really crucial, especially for guys in high school, because you naturally think, and I just, in my experience of talking to high school guys, this is what I always hear. You know, oh, what I'm about to say is probably wrong. Oh, what I don't know anything, so what am I? No, you can actually you can contribute a chiddush. Guys in my shir this summer have told me things on sugya that I spent weeks learning that I didn't think of, or they helped me clarify something. You can have creativity. You can have your own contribution in learning, even when you're not building the entire thing. Even if you're not starting from the ground up, what I was just describing, like the data points, the amassing, the building an approach, the machlokas, the this, the that, that was starting from ground up, from nothing, and building upwards the entire edifice on your own. It doesn't have to be that. You could be on the receiving end of a shir, the receiving end of Torah, and you can still have fish. You can still have your own personal insights, your own reformulation of something, your own kasha, your own terrence. You can add on to things in small ways, find your ability to have creativity in learning even when you're not at the level that I was just talking about. That's a very important piece of advice number two. And then 2B, or 3, going along with that, is that another way you can do that and have innovation. This is something that carried me for a long time before I was at the level that I was just talking about. Not that, before I was experiencing what I was just talking about. I was using the idea of organizing summaries of sugyas, of shir, of what I learned, as a form of innovation. There's something called likute svarim, right? Likutim, right? Svarim that just amass information that really existed before them, and they amass them into a new form. Giving something that already exists new form is a form of creativity. That's a form of innovation. You don't have to be coming up with an idea that is completely new to be creating, to be developing something on your own. If you take an idea that exists already, but you reorganize it, you reformulate it, you develop it into a new structure, that is also an exciting enterprise, and one which you will feel that you are being creative, that you are impacting, that you're contributing. So when you listen to a shir, something that I loved doing from when I started getting into learning, and I still love doing this, is I find the joy in writing up summaries. New stuff, it could be bullet points, it could be, you know, little points, but reorganizing a shir someone gave. Someone gave a shir, so they were asking a kasha and a teretz and a raya and a mahalach and all this, but I would reorganize it into an organized structure. And I found the joy and excitement in doing that. That's another way that even on a little bit of a lesser level, you can have a little bit of a taste of this experience of independence and creativity and self-empowerment in your learning. So, I want to just close with a small point for you. If you look at the first side of this page, there's a Calvin and Hobbes comic strip of which I'm very fond. Calvin goes over to the Hobbes and he says, "Mom wants me to make my bed. Come help me, okay?" "Okay," says Hobbes. "You get some pencils and I'll get some big paper." "I thought we were making the bed," says Hobbes. Calvin responds, "And do all that work? No, we're going to invent a robot to make the bed for us." So Hobbes responds, "Won't inventing a robot be more work than making the bed?" And Calvin says, in conclusion, "It's only work if somebody makes you do it." There's a lot of MS to that. There's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth to that. We feel alive, we feel joy, we feel excitement and fun and energy when it's coming from our own input. Right? Calvin's willing to spend the time to create a robot to clean his room for him instead of just cleaning his room, even though creating a robot will take a lot more work. Because it's enjoyable to produce something on your own. The joy of Torah for me, and I'm offering it to you, and I suggested a few suggestions as to how you can do this in smaller ways. The joy of Torah is when it's your own. As the Pasuk says in Tehillim, the very first chapter of the Tehillim, the second Pasuk, on source 8 on the back of the page. Ki im b'toras Hashem cheftso, or b'toras so yehageh yomam v'layla. Anyone notice the difference between the word Torah twice in this Pasuk? First it starts off as Toras Hashem, and then it becomes Torah so. The more you toil in Torah, it becomes your Torah. And the joy and the fun and the beauty, the pleasure of Torah, the sweetness of Torah, is when it's Torah so, when it's your Torah, when you created it, when you produced it. So we offered a few suggestions as to how you could do this on your own. I want to just repeat them quickly. Number one, take some time off of the hard skills. Take some time off of breaking your teeth over Gemara and use Art Scroll. Ask Majrichim, ask Rebbeim to give you sources to help you be able to learn a sugya. Number two, your ha'aros, your questions, your small insights, don't undervalue them, don't minimize them. They have significance. They are contributions. They have real Torah in them. You can be creative in small ways of adding on to someone else's Torah. It doesn't have to be ground up on your own. And number three, the idea of summaries, making organizational summaries, reformulations of something you heard, is also a way that you experience your own kohos, your own input into Torah. So I hope that Mitzvah Shem Hashem should help us, that we should all be able to grow in Torah to the point where we feel that we are contributing, that we are adding, and to the everlasting evolution of Hashem's Torah that will fill this whole world with the radiance and spirit and light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu very soon.
This is a very nice way of viewing you. Apparently there's some people out there. There's some people that want to get inside, so there's a group outside.
I like to call.
So eventually get there. What I was suggesting is there's ways to start at some level that you're not fully there yet. You want people to buy you. So you're still looking at home, but they're getting the numbers to buy you. And number two, since it's cashier, you can still have your own initial number three, you can organize it. You can reorganize it. But you're right. Eventually, hopefully, you get there now.
Still recording.